Good afternoon and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet and I'm here in the studio with Laron Landis and the late Patty Fink. Our guests today are from Texas Pride Impact Funds, which is a new volunteer organization. It's a community foundation, and we'll talk about what that even means in just a minute. Our guests are Judy Sherman in her professional life. Judy, how would I put this properly? You screw with other people's money?
Well, I do financial planning, Dave.
That's what I was trying to say. And Roger Waddell, who's been on our show before in one of his many, many iterations. Roger just retired for the fourth time.
Just second. This one is for keeps.
This one's for keeps, yes. So you'll be back when in your new job. Okay, good. Texas Pride Impact Funds. Judy, what is it and where did it come from?
So Texas Pride Impact Funds was organized as a nonprofit entity in the state of Texas in 2015. And that was the result of a year's worth of work among 10 individuals here in the Dallas community. Of course, Dave, that included you, Roger, myself. A number of folks that have been very involved. Many of us had been very involved in Black Tie Dinner. And it was in 2013 that a generous potential donor to Black Tie Dinner stepped up and said he wanted to have Black Tie Dinner as a beneficiary for a substantial amount of money at his death, and he wanted Black Tie Dinner to establish donor advised funds, which I won't get into that later. It's just a charitable gifting strategy for people to put money in an account today and take the tax deduction and give the money away over time. And of course, Black Tie Dinner, as we all know, any money that comes in 2017 and all the fundraising that they're doing will be gifted out to beneficiaries, the 22 or so beneficiaries that they've selected. So any money that comes into Black Tie in a given year goes out that same year, which is a wonderful thing. We recognized, however, that this gentleman's request may be beyond the scope of what Black Tie Dinner was really all about as a totally volunteer organization with one staff person. Donor advised funds were not going to happen, all this, that, and the other. So in Black Tie Dinner fashion, we formed a committee to analyze, evaluate, and look at all the ifs, ands, and buts. And that committee took about a year, and I chaired that with Chris Cavallis, actually, and we came back to a recommendation to the board of Black Tie Dinner that no, this is not something Black Tie should take on. However, we see the need for an LGBTQ organization that can, in fact, do fundraising and start an endowment and take legacy gifts and then over time determine the best way to gift those back to the community. And with their, not with their blessing, but we certainly wanted to do something, you know, in concert and leverage the Black Tie brand as much as we could. So we stepped aside and formed our steering committee that we worked for about a year and formed Texas Pride Impact Funds with the intention to be a statewide organization. We really realized, you know, in looking at kind of doing our own due diligence about the market and the needs that we saw from a foundation and fundraising standpoint, that there was not an organization that was out there to facilitate gifts and to do fundraising and to reach out and establish donors across the state. And so we took that as our charter to really affect the lives of LGBTQ Texans. And then we realized, okay, well, we don't just, you know, put up a sign and say, hey, here we are, and expect that we're going to get $10 raised in a year. But to establish some credibility and, frankly, to inform our own grant-making priorities, we embarked on a statewide needs assessment. And we came across a funder out of New York, funders for LGBTQ issues, and we fall right in the sweet spot of an initiative they have going on called Out in the South. Tremendous work, tremendous research. Texas, of course, is one of the seven states that they've targeted. And without, I don't think I'm overstating what funders thinks about us, but they love that we are here in Texas at such a critical time. But I should let Roger talk about that.
Well, I was going to say, one of the differences between what Black Tie does and what this will do, and I'm saying will do because it's operational but not granting money yet.
No, our intention is to complete the statewide needs assessment, which is underway right now, and we'll go through that process, and that will conclude at the end of 2017. But we have raised a decent amount of money, $300,000+, maybe a little more than that. Yeah.
Right.
So we'll be in a position in early 2018 to start doing some grant making.
Now, one difference, though, Black Tie has some set beneficiaries. Every year you apply to be a beneficiary. Right. And the beneficiaries just use that money however they see fit within guidelines set in Black Tie's.
Right.
Right. Those are unrestricted funds to the organizations, which is a really sweet designation for nonprofits.
This seems like it's going to be granting, you know, let's say we have we want to do a homeless shelter for LGBT youth or something like that. I'm just doing a
system. Right, right.
And you would ask for a grant for a specific project, probably.
We will take the results of the needs assessment, which is, right now our focus is on an individual survey, and we're trying to get, my goal is if we can get to 1,000, it'd be really wonderful. We're a little over 800 now. We have one more week. But we want to take the results of this needs assessment, which includes literature review, key informant interviews, focus groups, organizational surveys, and the individual survey. And there's a research team at the University of Texas, Dallas, working on all of this for us. One of the things to come out of that will be an identification of gaps between needs and resources. And those will become the priorities for our initial grant making, to establish both statewide and regionally within the state, because we're a really large state, and there may be larger gaps in particular services in one part of the state than other.
So if someone was going to want to build a community center in Odessa, that
where
could be
is nothing, basically.
Right. And, yes. And with or without a community center, there's nothing.
Right.
Right.
I used to live there.
Yeah.
Somebody else, say, in, you know, a suburb of San Antonio could have a program that's, you know, $15,000 away from what they need.
Right.
But, you know, the Odessa Community Center needs a lot of money.
Right.
So you would, the bigger gap there, and they're not going to get it. They're not going to, they tap their community, they're
right.
as far as
right.
they can get.
Right.
And that's really kind of the project you're describing.
Potentially.
So, right. I mean, there would be other factors that would go into that. One of the other things that we want to do is work with existing service providers. There might be a need for a community center in Odessa, but the greater need might be counseling.
Gotcha.
Mental health counseling. Might be. And this is all without data in front
right,
of us.
Right.
And if that's the greater need, it's more likely to be a higher priority than a community center.
Yeah, and I mean,
because somebody's already doing that service, they're just not letting the LGBTQ community know it's there and available.
Right, and Patty, having come out of Odessa, that probably is a bigger need,
true.
And you probably should have had some.
Definitely. I went and got some, actually. I paid for it myself. But, you know.
Well, let's go back to the needs, and I know that's a big part of this. You're doing several different things to find out what those needs are. You mentioned the survey. I just found out about it today. So I'm sure a lot of other people don't know about it also. Tell us how we can go to that link.
Well, if you will go to Facebook, find Texas Pride Impact Funds and like our page. On the page is a link to the individual survey.
Okay.
You can click on that link. It'll take you right there.
Isn't there a link also on the website?
There's a link on the website at TXPIF.org. And although we've been highly dependent on social media to promote the survey, maybe not to the best extent.
Lauren is barely on social media.
Yeah, right. But
he lives in the suburbs, Judy.
Yeah. As does she.
we do encourage you to be at a notebook or a PC. It's not, the survey is extensive, and by design, it was intended to be thorough and touch on as many different subjects as possible.
Yeah, it's probably 20 to 25 minutes long for an individual. So it is comprehensive, and it is time well spent and well invested in the future of our communities across the state.
And it's anonymous.
It is anonymous. There's
highly
no
secured.
Personal, yeah, there's no personal data collected. The link is actually monitored through an academic survey software program housed at UTD. It is if people do surveys, they'll know the name Qualtrics. It's a standard survey kind of software.
Judy, you're saying it's no personal information. There are identifiers, though.
Certainly demographic data is collected. But no names, no addresses, nothing personal.
Birth dates, none of that.
None of that, just general demographic.
Right. So none of the data that Trump wants, you know, all the states to send.
None of the voter ID information will be included.
And the Russians have not hacked, right?
So far as we know,
Qualtrics
is not on the Russian radar.
That's good to know. Okay, so how are you doing so far in different demographic groups? Are there some groups that you need more of right now?
It's picking up. I'm happy to say in the last 3 weeks, we've actually done better. But we always can use more input from rural areas of Texas. For example, we have no respondents from Odessa. We have no respondents from Midland. We have no respondents from Kilgore or Longview. We do have one from Maybank.
Wow.
Thank you, Maybank.
Tyler.
Maybank's actually
a big gay area.
We should have many more from Maybank and Gun Barrel.
There's an LGBT church down there.
Right.
So, and that gets back to an earlier comment. What's being most effective in cultivating respondents is individual contacts. So, if you are listening and you take the survey, please use your network to cultivate additional respondents. That's the way we will get outside of the urban centers and the suburbs of those urban centers.
Through word of mouth.
Yeah.
And then different demographic groups in the community. Let's just go through some of them. The trans community, are they responding?
Yes.
They are. Actually,
good representation. I'm not sure we should try to quote a percentage of the respondents at this point.
That'll change.
But suffice to say, we have had good response from the trans community.
But you need more.
Even the bisexual community, and happen to say that we've got about an even 50-50 between gay men and lesbian women.
Oh, so, awesome.
Yeah.
And you don't have any of those results yet for us to talk about.
No. Where we are missing input, we get to, I think, from the Hispanic community,
we actually had better response from the Latino community than we have from the African-American.
We have not had tremendous response. And, of course, as Roger said, the rural areas. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, though. I don't get too hung up. I mean, we all want to have as broad an input, and frankly, I want El Paso, the urban, the larger urban areas in South Texas. But the Williams Institute out of California, they've done a tremendous amount of research nationwide about our LGBTQ community. And the Out in the South research as well, I believe, supports this, that in Texas, we know that approximately 70% of the entire 900,000-plus LGBT, because there is no Q identifier yet, but 900,000 LGBT Texans and 70-plus percent live east of the I-35 corridor, which, of course, includes...
Wow.
From here down to San Antonio. And it's because, Patty, you're a perfect example. A kid from Odessa?
Yeah, came to Dallas.
You're going to get the you-know-what out of town ASAP. So.
Which actually is a shame. There should be good, strong LGBT communities in each of these smaller
cities. And today, in the 21st century, I hope that we see that young people are more, feel more empowered to be able to go home after
or stay
college.
Home.
Or stay home.
Stonewall has done a good job of, I was going to say infiltrating, but opening.
Infiltrating is good.
Opening organizations. Their East Texas group had something like 12 organizers, and they were having meetings. They sent me a list of where their meetings were. Well, one was in Tyler, one was in Longview, but they were in places like Gilmer. And other places like that you'd go, really? But the idea was, okay, well, that's central in this county, and people can get there, and then this one's central in this county, and some people will get there, and not everybody's going to go to all of them. But it was really smart organizing that they did.
Right.
You know, same thing with organizing, you know, you were saying a community center or mental health services. It's not going to be like in Dallas where we have everything for everybody in each town.
Well, but we'll assume right now that in Dallas everybody gets everything they need, which I don't think we can support. But what we want to be able to do is to take this statewide data and look at it statewide, but then we want to look, so how are the needs different along the border? How are than in West Texas, than in the Panhandle, than in East Texas? And one of the mechanisms that we've put in place to make sure that we are in touch with those regional differences is to establish regional leadership councils in these areas, so that while we are a statewide organization and the administration is statewide, funding is statewide, but right now in Dallas-Fort Worth and in Houston and in Austin, we have local constituencies meeting, setting up their own infrastructure to function in ways that they can take the information we receive and then see how it applies in that region.
That's going to be some more word of mouth stuff in some of these areas of Texas.
Oh, sure.
It's easy to find somebody in Houston or Austin.
Yeah.
You know, because there's an established community, you can look on the web and find
people. But it's really been interesting, Patty, that as we've started to work and engage with people in Houston and in Austin, we're learning very quickly that the way the gay communities relate to each other and see their own personal mission, if you will, and priorities that they may have, very different from Dallas, no surprise. Well, it surprised me a little bit, particularly how different Houston is from Dallas.
Well, but personality. You know,
Austin,
it is partially
way off the chart.
Yes. Let's talk about that. We need to take a break.
Okay.
And we'll talk about it right after the break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with LaRon Landis and the late Patty Fink. And we are talking to Judy Sherman and the retired Roger Waddell.
This is Rawlins Gilliland, and I'm listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3. And darn glad to be doing it.
And I'm Dave Taffet in the studio with LaRon Landis and the late Patty Fink, and we're talking to Judy Sherman and Roger Waddell of TPIF.
To piff.
I'm just reading it. That's the Texas Pride Impact Funds, which are, it's a community's foundation.
We will evolve to become a full-fledged community's foundation, which encompasses a charter of fundraising, education, and advocacy. That is the mission of any community's 501c3.
If people know the Communities Foundation of Texas that does that annual fundraising day online.
Get up
for,
and give. Or right. Giving Day. North yeah. Texas Giving Day.
Giving Day. And that's done by the... This is that same sort of thing on a different scale for the LGBT community.
Right.
In a way.
Any community foundation, by definition, with the IRS, has to have a demographic... charter, if you will, community that they're focused on. And so, you know, here in town, we've got the Dallas Women's Foundation, we've got the Dallas Foundation, and
Communities Foundation of Texas,
Greater Houston Foundation. There are no shortages of fantastic foundations across the state that have the Dallas Foundation has been around since 1929 and is a multi-billion dollar organization. Yeah. So
one of the motivations for this initiative from funders for LGBTQ issues was their analysis of foundation giving across the country. And, you know, the kind of common statistic we hear is that roughly 10% of the U.S. population identifies as LGBT. But what they found is less than 6 cents of every dollar given by foundations nationwide goes to organizations or issues related to LGBTQ causes.
Wow.
Wow.
So
Does that include AIDS also?
Everything.
Right. Wow.
So one of their initiatives is to build up philanthropy both from and to our communities. So their work in this Out in the South initiative is to help bolster that presence. And Texas Pride Impact Funds is one of the grantees in the planning grant that's funding our needs assessment. We also then have the benefit of learning from and with other LGBTQ related communities foundations across the country. So
that's a big plus.
We're actually doing a site visit to our fund in Fort Lauderdale in August, funded in part by funders grants to keep the communication network going and to help build up this philanthropy.
I'm glad you mentioned Fort Lauderdale and our fund. They cover all of Florida, right?
They're primarily Fort Lauderdale area.
Oh, okay. Who does Orlando?
That's David's pop quiz.
We were talking about
Pulse a lot.
When the Pulse massacre occurred, there was an immediate outpouring of philanthropic care. And the question was, so where do those dollars go? Well, our fund already existed. They had the infrastructure ready. They became the holder of those funds and the manager of those funds. They didn't have to wait. Nobody had to set it up. It was immediate. And I think the amount of that fund now is over $2 million.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
And that wouldn't have happened that quickly if the infrastructure hadn't been in place. Now, David and I were talking earlier, and Ron talking earlier, what might the world look like? How might it be different if those infrastructures had existed in 1982?
Oh,
at the beginning of the AIDS crisis. Mm-hmm. When we might not have had to raise all those funds, a dollar at a time, in the bar culture. Because the infrastructure wasn't there, we had to create it. And fortunately, we've built on that infrastructure now, and we do great voter ID, we do great advocacy kinds of work. But that's because the infrastructure is now here. We want to expand that, and we want to be a channel for our community's foundation back to our communities.
You know, we want to help identify overlapping interests that other not-for-profit organizations have, and they are funding or servicing, and we can be the either matchmaker between donors and those interests or service providers. So, you know, the work that we're doing to identify needs of the population includes, of course, identifying what's being done today to meet those needs. Who are the service providers? Where do they get their funding? And it's really been interesting to start to recognize that that can be a very powerful role that an organization like TPIF can play to facilitate cross-funding.
And just an example of that, and we had them on our show a few months ago, is Promise House, which is a very mainstream organization that does homeless housing for homeless youth.
And
wonderful services for them. I mean, everything that a parent would do. Everything, including helping them look for an apartment when it's time for them to do that, giving them money for their security deposits, things that parents would do that these kids' parents should be doing, but it was left to us to do. But one of the things they did was they surveyed their population and found that so many of them were LGBT that now they've started gearing some services specifically for LGBT kids. And they had to go to New York and Los Angeles to find anything like what they're doing. They couldn't find anything much closer than that. Right. But that's the type of thing that you're talking about.
Right, and that's why we have great support. A lot of people will say, well, wait a minute, aren't you in competition with the Resource Center, as an example, Equality Texas, as an example? And we'll say, actually, no. We are increasing the pie in the first place. And we've got great support. C.C. Cox is a tremendous supporter, and Chuck Smith as well is one of the first in Austin to step up and support what we're doing down there. So, because they all recognize that as tremendous a job, certainly as the Resource Center is doing here in Dallas, and the breadth of services that they provide, they can't do everything and will never have enough money to fund everything they need.
TPIF is not a service provider.
Right.
Right.
Our goal is to raise money to give away to those service providers.
And Chuck might find, I mean, not in this legislature, but it could happen that we'd have a really crazy legislature one year that would propose all kinds of idiotic legislation that is just a waste of money. And he needs funding to help get rid of some of that. He'd be able to come to TPIF, assuming that that's one of the needs that you're seeing. I can't imagine in Texas anybody would think of stupid laws as a need for us to get rid of.
Or a special whip session to do that.
We fall under some of the same restrictions. We can only contribute to other 501c3s. So we would be able to help support the educational work.
Right.
Of Equality Texas, but not the lobbying.
But you're really kind of the inverse of the Gay and Lesbian Fund for Dallas.
Oh.
They take in money and give it to strictly non-LGBT.
Right.
Right, to increase the awareness of the philanthropy that comes from our community.
Right. And you're taking non-LGBT philanthropy and LGBT philanthropy and channeling it into LGBTQ issues.
Right.
Cool. You know, we are very blessed, I think, here in North Texas that we see a great bit of generosity from this community, gay and straight. one of the statistics that blew me away, we had a convening in Birmingham of all the other 11 or so grantees from funders of LGBTQ issues. Let's just call them funders for short, the group out of New York. And their research is that on a national level, less than 3% of LGBT identified donors say that they are giving to LGBT issues.
Really?
3%. Wow. It was stunning.
What are they giving to mostly?
Well, as
obviously
one gentleman in Fort Lauderdale said, if I see one more wealthy gay man donate his estate to his alma mater or a hospital, I'm just going to choke. Mm. So, and we want, if that's where that individual wants his money to go, that's great. But he needs to have opportunities and an awareness of where are the other opportunities for his wealth.
Our community's giving mirrors our society's giving. Religious organizations, universities, colleges, and hospitals. Mm. And then you go to arts organizations, symphonies, art museums, or, you know, all. So,
okay, so
social causes don't rank really high.
So Lauren and I are poor working people, but Patty's wealthy. So she needs to take her millions and put it somewhere. Uh-huh. And this is where a donor-advised fund would come in. But she gives a lot of money to things like the Symphony and Dallas Museum mm-hmm. of Art, I mean, which are mm-hmm. both very gay organizations. Let's be clear about that. But she also wants some of it to go within the LGBT community. Explain mm-hmm. how that works and where does that fit into all this?
Specifically,
the other thing that I forgot, she also gives a lot to KNON.
Right.
Which is a good cause.
A great cause.
Right.
I'm going to let Judy talk about how donor-advised funds work, because they're really kind of a tax philanthropy match that allows donors some additional level of input into where those funds go, as opposed to a legacy gift that might come to TPIF for future giving.
Right. I like to use the example of a donor-advised fund that I've seen and established in my own work in financial planning. Someone has a windfall year, and they suddenly have, you know, additional $200,000 bonus that they weren't expecting, and that's going to be a horrible hit to their tax situation for the year. I mean, I love telling my clients who complain about their how much taxes they're paying. If we've done everything we can to minimize your tax burden, but yeah, you're still going to pay a couple hundred thousand. That's a good problem to have.
Sure, you know, I'd love to have that problem.
Right. So, but nonetheless, one of the tax reduction strategies that someone could entertain is to take that $200,000 and establish a donor-advised fund. And that fund would be held at TPIF, and in our case, that's being managed at the Dallas Foundation. Or it could be held at any number of other community foundations that do that work. And in that given year, so Patty, you took your $200,000 bonus and set up a donor-advised fund at TPIF. And in 2017, now you have a $200,000 charitable deduction. You and your CPA are going to figure out how much of that, you know, and so forth and so on. That's beyond my pay grade. Now you get over to the accountant's work to really understand the bottom line impact of that that donation. But as Roger alluded to, now you have established the Patty Fink Donor Advised Fund at Texas Pride impact bonds.
And I like that you left Erin out of this completely.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's okay.
It was she's Patty probably Farmers. Cackling on the other, listening to the show. Like, that's never going to happen.
She's thinking, $200,000, I've got that spent already. Don't even think about it. So you and Erin have a fund established, and next year you want to do your usual giving to KNON,
to the symphony, wherever
you want to gift. You then make that request, send my $1,000 to KNON, you make that request to, in our case, the Dallas Foundation and TPIF jointly, if you will, and we take that request through the same grant-making rigor, to confirm that the donor, the grantee that you've identified is a legitimate 501c3, and in our case, does not fall outside the range of philanthropy that we as an organization embrace. And it's a broad range, mm-hmm. certainly, but we've said this
but
many times.
But you probably
we're not
won't
going
approve
to
Focus on the Family.
We're not going to, no. Family Research Council, the NRA, none of those folks are going to get a donor advice fund grant or anything from TPIF or through TPIF in the foreseeable future.
And here's where
I was
going with this, and we need to take a break. If somebody wants to do their own fund through TPIF, just because they give to other places doesn't mean that, oh, I need to do this fund for my gay stuff and this fund for my
of
gay stuff.
No.
All of that giving can be channeled
it can all
through
go through one thing through
TPIF.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Ron Landis and the late Patty Fink, and our guests are Judy Sherman and Roger Waddell from Texas Pride Impact Funds. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Paulette Lill, and I listen to Lambda Weekly. I hope that you will, too.
And this is Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet with Ron Landis and the late Patty Fink. And Judy Sherman and Roger Waddell from Texas Pride Impact Funds are our guests.
You had mentioned that, you know, you guys are not a service provider. So Once the needs are established through the survey and the other channels that you all are operating in, once those needs are established, are there any areas that are off the table, like HIV and AIDS services? That you will not maybe donate to because they're so well established. And I know you mentioned that, Judy, that you know you don't want to overlap.
It would depend. I mean, that's where insights and wisdom from our regional leadership councils will be important. Mm-hmm. It might be that HIV services are all intact throughout the state. It might not be. It doesn't mean there needs to be a new HIV services organization. It might be that an existing organization just needs some additional information, maybe some additional funding to make sure that a subpopulation is getting the services.
Here's an example. We have all kinds of AIDS services in the city. But now a number of people with HIV who've been living with HIV for 20 years or more, they're aging. And Resource Center might come up with the idea, hey, we need a program for aging and aging with HIV. And it might be, like you mentioned, Roger, earlier, maybe mental health issues are one of those focus areas that you're interested in. So that's a mental health issue that you might fund and fund it through an existing service provider.
Well, yeah, I mean.
And I'm making all that up. I'm just giving an example of where.
And we should also say this needs assessment is the first statewide LGBTQ needs assessment ever done in the state of Texas. There have been regional assessments, there have been HIV and other health kinds of assessments, but never a statewide, complete, comprehensive needs assessment. This is going to help us understand future areas for research. That we would also be in a position to fund. So we might learn, for example, Laurent, that there's a section of the state where HIV services are really critically unavailable or underfunded. So we might then at a later stage do some research in that to find out, so why is that the case? Under a system that's supposed to provide services to everybody who needs them, why isn't it working? So that's just an example.
You know, an example of that was a few years ago, probably 7-8 years ago, the AIDS service provider in Abilene closed, mm-hmm. which meant that the closest AIDS services were either in Fort Worth or
actually
Midland. Or Weatherford.
Weatherford. Mm-hmm. AIDS services of rural Texas.
Which was Weatherford and Abilene.
Right.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
they expanded their territory at that time to encompass Abilene and further west.
And again, here's an example of where, had this been in place, that could have gone a whole lot smoother if what they needed was a little bit of, you know, an infusion of money to set up.
Yeah, it's a possibility.
Yeah,
who knows? What we want is for the infrastructure to be in place so that we can respond according to the needs that we can identify. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we actually believe that this will be the first broad needs assessment that will spawn off additional research and further needs assessment in the years to come. We're not intending this to be a snapshot and a one-time effort that's going to capture all that needs to be captured across the state.
Well, and two, if you have these regional kind of steering committees,
right.
Available, they may want to define a survey for Midland, Odessa,
correct?
You know,
right. San Antonio,
Plainview,
work to do there.
Yeah. All those areas encompassing that they can really drill down then and say, you know, when you do seek these X services, where do you go?
Right.
And see what those answers are from, you know, all those disparate, faraway places.
I think one of the things we're going to learn from this needs assessment is where we need to do more work.
Right.
The silence that we're hearing from large geographic areas is information in itself.
Yes.
And then the next step is to figure out what do we do about that?
We haven't talked about the town halls, which will immediately follow the results that come in from
the needs.
There'll be a draft report, and our strategy is at that point, and this will all happen in the fourth quarter of 2017, is for us to take this draft report out across the state and have, we're calling them town hall style meetings, to present the findings as we report them today, get some input on how that rings in their area, if you will. But we'll be doing that. Lubbock, you know, we'll take it to southwest as well as the...
In talking about other areas, before the first break, you were talking about how you're finding, you know, in Dallas, we're organized, different groups get along by and large. We have an organization for everything. And the fact that we didn't have TPIF just said to us, oh, yeah, we need one of those. Another city has one, Alabama has one of these things. And we don't, that's ridiculous. But working with other cities has not been, it's not as obvious to everybody everywhere that there should be one of those for us too, and working with other cities has been a challenge.
Sure.
Well, yeah. You know, we're aware of, you don't say Dallas if you mean Dallas Fort Worth. You don't say Fort Worth if you
right.
I mean, so
right.
It's like Austin and San Antonio are not the same city, but frequently in our conversation we link them together. So we're working with local leadership to cultivate their own leadership teams.
Right. We are absolutely respectful of the different culture. That might be too big of a word, but maybe not. Right. There's certainly a different culture in Austin that they want to thrive and continue doing things the way they've always done things, which has been very successful. It's not necessarily the way the community up here in Dallas gets things done, and certainly not the way Houston wants to go forward.
And one other thing, in raising money, every penny raised in Dallas won't necessarily stay in Dallas. Every penny in Austin is. But let's say somebody from Midland. Midland's an area of the state that's booming. And
it was. Before the price of oil dropped.
Before Patty left.
Exactly. Yeah.
Actually, the population of Midland is growing again.
Oh, it
it's
is?
Been growing very fast in the last couple of years. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, as we used to say, you know, the people who own the oil wells live in Midland, and the people who work on the oil wells
live in Odessa.
And I was saying Midland.
And that was at least.
Because Midland could look at this and say, why should we donate to this? We'll give them our money, and then the money will go to, you know, wherever, Houston. If a certain amount of money is raised in one area of the state, is it going to stay in that area of the state?
If a donor comes to us from Midland and says, I've got a substantial amount of money I would like TPIF to work with, but I really want to see most of it come back to Midland, Odessa, that's a restricted gift in our nomenclature, but we are more than happy to accept it and let him or her know that you got it. We may not be identifying or able to gift to organizations in the Midland Odessa area in 2018, but it's on our radar now. And so it's just the type of gifting, and those there's all kinds of ways to work
that. And I know those
are
technical things. I just don't, I wanted to know, people won't be turned off by this with the idea that, well, this was organized in Dallas. Is all this money really going to go to Dallas?
Well, actually, our corporate headquarters are Houston. Mm-hmm. So we've been intentional about spreading ourselves across the state so that we aren't identified as a Dallas organization. We are a Texas organization with leadership dispersed across the state.
And we've gotten really good at using GoToMeeting for our board meetings and whatnot. It works fantastic. So you can be anywhere in the state and be on our board and get to a GoToMeeting link.
Well, we're coming up on the end of the show, but before the end of the show, we want to talk a little bit about switching gears here, talk a little bit about the Supreme Court's ruling, the Texas Supreme Court's ruling, and which basically said that gay couples have no right to benefits with their employers.
I don't think they really said that. They just said it wasn't spelled out in Obergefell.
Right, and they sent it back to the lower court.
The part of Obergefell that says same-sex couples have the same right to marriage and all the benefits and responsibilities that go with it wasn't clear.
Right.
Because saying that you have the right to all those benefits, it's kind of fuzzy.
Well, the whole thing is fuzzy because usually in a court, if you make an opinion, you don't send it back to the lower court. They did both. So I'm confused.
Well, and not only this.
I haven't read the opinion. So
They denied the case. They weren't going to hear the case.
Right.
Originally.
And because they're all GOP and they're all elected, and they got, you know, calls or visits from the governor, from the lieutenant governor, from the attorney general, and others in their party, they said an unprecedented move in our history. They opened a case they had denied. Out of nowhere.
Right.
Unsolicited, so to speak, but not through the normal channels.
And then ruled unanimously.
And it's so unconstitutional.
Yeah.
Roger has something to say about the issue and so forth itself. And David was asking us earlier, how does something like this affect the work of TPIF? And I just want to remind David and Roger, who and we all worked on the steering committee in 2015, and when Obergefell came down, for a nanosecond, we thought, ooh, maybe there's not going to be such a need for an organization like this. You know, you started to really question,
right,
wow, what's our relevance going to be going forward when we have all these, so... Once again, our mission is confirmed, stronger than ever.
Yeah,
and in fact, we're applying for a matching grant at this point. And one of the questions is, so what are the issues your community is facing? And so I wrote that section of the grant, and I just started listing. And basically, my concluding statement was, the better way to phrase that is, what issues and challenges aren't we facing in the state of Texas?
Oh, no kidding.
It impacts the sense of self-being of our community across this state. And why aren't we hearing from people in Midland and Odessa and Kilgore and Longview? It's got to be tied in some way. You just never know when the rug's going to be pulled out from under you in this state.
You know, and I can give you a very personal example of where that's important. The night Brian died and that following week, anybody who asked, it was, yes, Brian's my husband, and everybody I came in contact with treated me as if this was my spouse who had just died, and it made such a difference.
Absolutely.
I'm not saying that that was an easy, or anything about that week was easy. It was the most horrible week of my life. But the way I was treated by paramedics, by Parkland Hospital, by a police officer who drove me back to my house after, you know, from the hospital, every step along the way, by all of the reporters at the press conference a week later, where I kind of stepped in and gave them a second example of somebody who died from 911 not working. All of those steps along the way, it was the first time that I really felt married.
Yeah.
Because, you know, right after you marry, you always say, do you really feel married? And Patty, you've said that also. You know,
It does have a feeling about it, a veneer about it that's different. You know, that I think really is kind of tangible. You can really...
But this was a tangible.
Right.
And if that's just a little benefit that we don't get, I can't imagine what that week would have been like.
Right. But imagine you living in, say, Odessa, and a paramedic coming and saying, your husband, with air quotes, and your friend... You know, and totally diminishing the fact that you were married, just like that paramedic's married, you know?
And I get that.
That would just make that week worse.
It would have. And I'm saying I was respected every step of the way. Okay. And those are, when I talk about the benefits of marriage, it's some of that is intangible, but that's a benefit of marriage. Mm-hmm. This ruling is disgusting.
Yep. Yeah.
It cannot stand.
Oh, well, of course it's not going to stand.
But in the interim,
exactly,
it is.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly where it's going.
But, you know, the city of Dallas isn't going to, you know, yank all their benefits that they're offering there.
No, it wasn't a directive.
That's one of the gray areas. Since this was a Houston-specific and it was a mayoral action-specific case, we'll see what the ramifications
order,
are.
But as nonetheless, opposed to city council vote,
it's indicative of that constant knowing that attack can come anywhere, anytime, any form.
It's a form of insecurity.
Yes, it is.
Absolutely.
If you can't count on it.
And Laurent, did you put that link on our Facebook page yet?
Not yet.
Okay. You will. Well, he was with his phone, you know, doing that thumb thing on a phone. I don't know what that's all about.
Yeah.
But tell us one more time. What is that link?
Well, you can go to txpif.org and find the link to the survey, or you can like us on Facebook, and the link is on our Facebook page.
It is.
Awesome.
Impact Texas.
I want to thank both of you for being here.
Thank you so much. Good to see you. It's been a long time, Ron.
I'm going to come back when your survey results are all done.
When we find out what...
Yeah, that'd be wonderful to
know. We'd love to hear about all about that.
Yeah.
And we'll find that in Midland there are no gay services.
And even
maybe
less
we'll
attacks,
find that there are.
Maybe we'll find that that's where the surprise will be. Our guest next week is the attorney from Dykes on Bikes, for Dykes on Bikes.
Brooke Oliver.
Brooke Oliver. And, of course, on Facebook, you can't use the word Dykes anymore. So if you see it referred to as lesbians on motorcycles, you'll know why. For all of us here at Lambda Weekly, we'll see you next week.
This is William.